using tissue samples of seafood harvested in the heavily oiled subsistence grounds. So they found large quantities of North Slope crude in the creatures along the shore. Only a few of the fish tested had detectable levels. Now, Exxon and Vico have laid off their village workers, and with the winter storms beginning to whip up the sea, the Chugach natives are racing to fill their freezers and smokehouses. No one knows what they'll do this winter when the fish are all eaten and their money runs out. Reporting for APRN with producer Susan Karnes, I'm Gary Fire.
Supertankers continue to carry a quarter of the nation's oil production out of the Port Valdez pipeline terminal, but pending legislation could influence the handling of that traffic. We're now going to rejoin Peter Kenyon in Washington for a look at that. Peter?
Thank you, Pat. I'm here with Jeffrey Petrick, who is the counsel for the Subcommittee on Water, Power, and Offshore Energy Resources. That's from the House Interior Committee. The Senate has passed some oil spill legislation. The House is scheduled to act this week, perhaps this week and next. The initial debate is scheduled for this Thursday, in fact. And there appears to be what could develop into a fairly significant fight brewing between the various committee chairs who are dealing with this. And one of the major issues of controversy is an issue called preemption. It's somewhat technical for a lot of people, but it's extremely important to a lot of folks, coastal states that currently have tougher oil spill laws than what Congress is proposing. That includes at least Alaska, Washington State, and Maine. And if this bill, as written in the House, becomes law, those tougher liability laws, how much the oil companies would have to pay after spills, would be knocked off the books, and only the weaker federal regime would be in place. The reason they want to do that is that the supporters of preemption clause say that they have to protect the environment from fly-by-night, one-ship shipping companies, and there's also some international problems with international protocols. Jeff Petrick, you work for the people who are supporting the state's rights and are not happy with this move to preempt state liability laws. What's the argument there?
Well, Peter, I work for Congressman George Miller of California, who is joined with Congressman Gary Studs of Massachusetts in supporting a package of amendments on the floor, which will be offered this Thursday. In essence, the problem that my boss, Congressman Miller, and Mr. Studs have with the legislation as currently written is that the liability limits are much too generous to those who spill oil, and secondly, as you pointed out, many rights and responsibilities that would be affected by state law would be, in essence, preempted, wiped out. And both of the congressmen are very concerned about that, in that, in general, that in environmental laws, the states have the ability to enact tougher restrictions than the federal government if they choose, that the federal standard is a minimum. And yet here, for reasons which seem to be primarily to benefit the shipping and oil and gas industry, the legislation as written would prevent those rights from being enforced.
Let's talk a little bit about the liability sections here. You've got provisions in this bill as it's written now that would put pretty strict caps on how much a spiller would have to pay, no matter how bad the spill was and how much it cost to clean up and pay damages. What are those limits, and what would the Miller-Studs alternative be?
Well, that's a very good point, Peter. Under the bill as written in the House, the limit on Exxon's liability for cleanup costs and damages resulting from the Alaska oil spill, if this law were to apply, would only be $49 million. And
really?
Given the fact that they've spent close to $2 billion and have yet to resolve claims with the state of Alaska, or any of the claims with the injured fishermen and others, the ultimate damage total will be many billions of dollars, we expect. So that's the problem that Congressman Miller sees here, that it's unfair to the consumers and the taxpayers to let spillers like Exxon off the hook with such low limits.
Now, where do these limits come from? I mean, obviously, you must have been hearing the arguments from the people who proposed them. Why? I mean, on the face of it, without knowing any other reasons, it seems fairly absurd. Why would we want to limit their liability?
Well, the argument on the on this side is that the low limits of liability will assure that all vessels have insurance and are responsible in the majority of spills, which are much smaller, obviously, than Exxon Valdez. The other argument is that there would be a national fund that would kick in that would take over responsibility in the event that there's more damage than $49 million. The problem is that we feel, Congressman Miller and Congressman Studs, that the cap may be justified in certain circumstances, but it should be much higher than in the current bill. And secondly, the provision for unlimited liability in cases of negligence or misconduct should be made much easier to apply.
Okay, now, what about the issue of a secondary liability for the oil industry beyond the actual owner of the boat? I mean, they could create a shipping company that has one ship, no money, no assets to seize. It spills a lot of oil, they just go out of business and they're gone, and governments, I guess, would be stuck with the bill.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the provisions that Miller and Studs plan to offer in their amendments is to extend liability to the owner of the oil. And this is a very clear principle in Alaska law, in California law, in many of the states around the country. And it's one of the reasons that the oil industry is so interested in defeating the Miller-Studs Amendment, because they want to preempt those state laws and make the federal law that much more generous to them, in that the owner of the oil would not bear any responsibility under the bill as written.
This has been a fight, the question of preempting state oil spill laws for a decade or more. Congressman Jones has been backing it, and Senator George Miller, Mitchell, has been, among others, has been leading the fight against it. Do you think now that the Exxon spill and the other spills on the East Coast has brought this whole thing into much greater focus, and bills appear very likely to clear in some form or another, do you think that this preemption move is going to go over the top, or how do you see that fight shaping up?
Well, it's obvious that Exxon Valdez has had a dramatic impact on the legislative debate. The Senate 99-0 passed a bill which does not have state preemption, which leaves all of the state rights intact. And I think the tenor in the House will be much different. There frankly has not been a whole lot of attention in the past to oil spill liability legislation from committees other than the Merchant Marine Committee. And this year, it's clearly different, and we expect on the floor that the Miller-Studs Amendment has a very good chance of passing.
Does that still look like that's going to be happening this week?
As of right now, it's scheduled for Thursday, yes.
Okay. Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska, are you in the studios in Anchorage? Can you hear me? Senator Stevens?
Right here.
Senator, thank you very much. The Senate, of course, already has passed its oil spill bill, and some provisions that you sponsored are in there. Now we see a major floor fight developing on the House of Representatives this week. Do you think this preemption issue is going to threaten the chances of that bill, or how do you see that coming back to the Senate?
No, I think the history of the Exxon Valdez disaster fairly well demonstrates the problem involved, and I doubt very seriously that state preemption is more than just a temporary dispute in the House. It's in the Senate bill, and I think in conference we'll work it out in any event. It is something that has to be understood better. Actually, the bill that Congressman Jones has been backing does have an international liability fund. The difficulty is that people in local states have a very, difficult time trying to get after that fund. Under his concept, there's a liability per ship, and then a liability of the national fund, and then there's an international fund. We believe, those of us who believe, that the state laws ought to continue to be involved for spills within state jurisdiction. Now, mind you, that's the difference. There is still a room here for substantial compromise, and everyone being able to to achieve what they want. Our state doesn't have any jurisdiction outside the state of Alaska, but we, within the state of Alaska, we want to maintain our strict liability standards and our responsibility factor as far as those at fault. And even, we've got to keep in mind, there hasn't been any discussion yet, the basic bills that we deal with are create funds for a situation where there is no party at fault, no one that's really guilty of negligence. And I think that that has to be brought into this. The fund that we're talking about is the strict liability fund. We want to have, in the Exxon situation, Exxon was liable because there was unquestionable negligence that went into this man-made disaster that resulted there on Bligh Reef.
Okay, thank you. Jeffrey Patrick, let me ask you about that. What about a spill where you can't identify the spiller? Does the Miller-Studds amendment and package deal with that situation?
Well, clearly Senator Stevens is correct that that's the rationale for taxing the industry to create a billion-dollar fund, which would kick in when the responsible party is either unavailable or financially tapped out. So that is an important feature of both the House and Senate bills, and it would be a clear improvement over current law.
All right. Now, what about, sorry, Senator Stevens, go ahead.
I said there's no question about that, and that's where we're going to come together. We all still are looking right now at an oil spill that occurred with an American ship, an American company that was responsible. Now, we're still importing about half of our oil. Our oil is coming in on foreign tankers, and the problem of the House bill that they're trying to look at is how to deal with making certain that potential of the risk potential involved in those foreign tankers is met with U.S. law. I don't believe there's going to be the collision that people have seen in the past. I think the legislation we worked out in the Senate, after all, we had a collision there of the Commerce Committee, the Public Works Committee, and the Energy Committee. We all came together. We all have one bill that passed unanimously, almost 99-0. I don't see any reason to believe that we're not going to be able to get legislation that meets the national needs and international needs to work out these problems. And I really think the catalyst this time is the Exxon Valdez disaster. We know what happened. No one ever anticipated a spill of that type and magnitude and circumstances like occurred here. We know the cost, and the cost, as we just heard, is going to be well beyond $4 billion for us, too.
All right, Jeff Patrick, what about other things that I haven't heard mentioned in this package of House bills? I'm thinking of tanker safety measures like double bottom hulls and fundamental construction changes that are very expensive and have always been fiercely opposed by the shippers and the oil industry. Is there anyone talking in the House about doing that still?
Well, in the Senate, they adopted a provision which directs the Coast Guard within 1 year to require double hull, double bottoms or double hulls unless they find that there's a better way to increase safety. On the House side so far, the provisions simply require more study of this issue. This is a matter which it has been around for close to two decades in terms of congressional debate. At the time of the Pipeline Authorization Act, Secretary Morton, the Interior Secretary at the time, did make some promises to the Congress about double bottoms. We expect that on the floor of the House that there will be an amendment offered, and the House will vote on Thursday on the double bottom issue.
Senator Stevens, of course, the Senate already had a chance to vote on a similar amendment from Brock Adams of Washington, and that failed by just three votes. You were one who decided not to go along with that amendment. Do you think that it does need more study?
Not on yet. I was the one that authored the amendment on behalf of Senator Magnuson of Washington at the time the Alaska Pipeline Act passed in the Senate. We were requiring double bottoms. The difficulty was when we went to the international organization that controls the design of hulls, they would not go along. And as a matter of fact, not only did Secretary Morton support it, but even Vice President Agnew supported that. So President Nixon supported it. The whole Congress supported it at the time. The difficulty is now we're told if we try to change this international law, and it is international maritime law that governs the design of these tankers that we're trying to affect. I mean, we can control our own tankers, domestic-built tankers. This is to try and see if we can't cover the tankers that are coming into our waters from foreign nations. We believe that we have a way, and that is to have the Coast Guard promulgate a rule concerning tankers and to have this rule be subject to hearing and have it going into effect in the way that is normal to go again to this international organization and go back and say, we want once again for you to consider to change these rules. We have promulgated this rule, and this is what we'd like to see the international standard be. And after the Exxon Valdez, we think we might be able to get that changed internationally. But in any event, we ought to deal with our own concepts here on a basis of what is best. We still have the testimony, you know, that indicates that double bottoms and double hulls are not necessarily the answer. There may be other answers that are better for, in the long run for the environment. I happen to be one, as I said, I started off originally for double bottoms, but I'm convinced now that the Coast Guard is in its attitude is correct, that there's a way to achieve that if we want to achieve it, and is not trying to, by U.S. Congressional or governmental edict, try to change international law.
Peter, this is Corey Flint in Anchorage. Peter, we'd like to add yet another voice to this debate if we can. James Tierney, who is the Maine's Attorney General, is calling us from his home where he's listening to this program on Maine Public Radio. Mr. Tierney, welcome to the program.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Can we...
I'm perplexed about some of this discussion, though. It seems that this country knows how to protect its air and its water and its superfund. I don't understand why we can't use the same principles of environmental law to deal with this crisis.
Senator Stevens, would you like to respond to that? Is this a superfund... Should this be a Superfund item?
Well, we've created the fund. I worked with Senator Mitchell, who I'm sure that the Attorney General of Maine knows and supports to work out the Senate bill, and I expect that to be the final answer. That we were talking about double bottoms. I don't know what Superfund has to do with double bottoms.
Well, no, I'm delighted with the Senator, and your work and Senator Mitchell's efforts are appreciated. But it seems that we should keep the financial responsibility where it belongs, which is on the oil industry, and set tough federal standards and allow states to go further. What makes me nervous is when I hear discussions of eventual compromise and conference committee, because one of those compromises may be the elimination of a law here in Maine, which has worked very well for the last 20 years in protecting our coast.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that coming from an oil-producing state, that those of us that are trying to find ways to make sure that the United States has the capability of producing the oil that it needs find it strange that the people who insist on importing more foreign oil don't understand the problem of dealing with foreign tankers. Foreign tankers are not subject to our jurisdiction. And we're trying to find a way to say they can't come into our ports unless they have certain construction. The Coast Guard tells us that if we go about it the right way, we may have a chance now to put down a restriction against tankers coming into our domestic waters that are not don't have the environmental protections we seek. But right now the problem is that these foreign tankers are bringing in half of our oil, and they're not going to be subject to this law except for the liability. And the international standards of liability are the standards that are in the House bill. That's the great problem, and it's not a compromise. I don't seek to compromise. I seek to protect my state laws, which are stronger than Maine's, as a matter of fact.
All right, thank you. This is Peter Kenyon in Washington. Mr. Tierney, how do you see this fight to protect state laws? You're getting support from the Senate. The big focus seems to be the House of Representatives. The action appears to be happening this week. Do you see any hope to protect your own law and the other coastal states' laws?
Well, there's a desperate fight going on in this country to support the Miller-Stutz Amendment. It's going to be a difficult battle. The House committee broke down on geographical lines with non-coastal states and southern states coming up in favor of wiping out Maine's laws and 19 other states. I think there's a great deal of arrogance within the oil industry that somehow they feel that they did not have to go along with the same principles that have been the hallmark of national environmental policy, which means that the federal government sets minimum standards and states can go beyond that if they want. And that's exactly what we've done in Maine, and it's worked. It's going to be very difficult. I wish I shared Senator Stevens' confidence that when it gets down at the end, that the oil industry might have more muscle within that conference committee than some of us out here in the States who've worked so hard on the issue.
I don't think that. I've never heard from the oil industry saying to keep the limits of liability low. We created a fund, and the fund is created by payment per barrel by consumers. And this bill that passed the House puts a 1.3 cent per barrel charge on every barrel of oil that's consumed in the United States. The oil industry is not going to object if you make that $2 billion. The question is, how do you apply it to foreign tankers? It's not how do you apply it to the United States domestic oil industry. It's how do you apply it to foreign tankers.
Well, Senator, I wish you were right, but the oil industry is working very, very hard to wipe out Maine's law and the law of 20 other states. The Wilderness Society understands that. Environmental organizations understand that. The National Association of Attorneys General understands that. And unfortunately, a lot of congressmen sympathetic to the oil industry need to understand it as well, which is why we're in this fight.
Well, that's strange, you know, because people say that the oil industry's had a great impact on the legislature of my state now since we've had the great discovery in the Northland, and that there are allegations that it really controlled our state. And yet the liability laws of the state have stayed there and have never been disturbed by the oil industry, and they didn't want to disturb them. I don't think they have any interest in disturbing those liability laws. I do think that foreign producers do, and those people who are objecting to the increased assessment of taxes to oil consumed in this country but originating out of the country are the ones that are attacking us. As a matter of fact, I don't want to argue with you. All I'm saying is we're an oil-producing state, and we have strong laws as strong or stronger than yours, and no one's tried to change them in all this period of time.
Senator, this is Peter Kenyon in Washington again. I'd like to ask Jeffrey Petrick for his view on this question. Miller and Studd's amendments are going up against two powerful House chairmen. There's been some very intense lobbying on both sides of this issue. It's getting down to the wire. You said you're confident that they have a good chance, but in fact it's been many years that the bill has been stalemated. Do you really see it going this year?
Well, I think we have a lot more agreement between the three folks on the line here than disagreement on this issue. And specifically, we have a tremendous amount of support from the National Attorneys General Association, from Governor Cooper and the National Governors Association, and a coalition of environmental groups all working on the preemption issue. And I think that the tone in the House of Representatives has changed dramatically since Exxon Valdez, and with the right combination of representatives from coastal states whose laws would be eliminated by this law, this bill, and other Republican members who are concerned about the general matter of states' rights, we think we can build a coalition to win on the floor.
All right. Mr. Tierney in Maine, do you have any final thoughts on this preemption issue?
Well, just that it's just so important. Maine and Alaska are both a long way from Washington, D.C., and sometimes you just feel that with the tremendous power that the commercial interests have at stake, that our voices aren't going to be heard there, which is why we've worked to kind of keep our federal system intact and make sure we keep the law in the books. It's worked here. If there is a problem, we know that the Maine people are going to be on the scene within hours to do something about it. I just don't want to see give up that power and that liability responsibility to other parties.
Thank you very much. That's James Tierney, the Attorney General for the state of Maine. Also here in Washington with me is Jeffrey Petrick. And Senator Ted Stevens is in Anchorage, Alaska. He will remain with us on this program. And we're coming up in the next half hour. We have our Alaska Governor Steve Cooper and also Senator Ted Stevens. Please stay with us. You're listening to a live nationwide call-in program brought to you by the Alaska Public Radio Network and American Public Radio. My name is Peter Kenyon here at the studios of WAMU-FM in Washington, and you are listening to the Alaska Oil Spill, a nationwide calling program.
This program is made possible by Alaska Public Radio member stations and a grant from the American Public Radio Program Fund. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The toll-free line, courtesy of Alascom.
This is the Alaska Oil Spill, a nationwide call-in. The number here is 800-325-1100. I'm Pat Bodner in Anchorage. Governor Steve Cooper is standing by in Juneau. And joining us in the studios here in Anchorage is Alaska Senior Senator Ted Stevens. Are you with us, Governor? Well, I think the governor will be joining us momentarily. Perhaps you can respond. You were just responding a minute ago, Senator Stevens, to the concern about the cleanup efforts that are going on.
Well, I do have great concern, have had great concern since the very beginning, that we were not able to marshal the forces that we thought we had here in Alaska to recover the oil from the water. Of course, that was the major problem in terms of the Exxon Valdez disasters, that we did not get the oil out of the water. As a consequence, it went on these isolated beaches in an area that's the size of two great lakes. And as I pointed out to the president, if the oil had been coming out of Portland, Maine, by right now, there are traces of the oil down around Norfolk, Virginia. I mean, it's hard for people in the rest of the country to understand the distances and the size of Alaska, the distances within Alaska and the size of our areas, such as the Prince William Sound and the area around Kodiak and Katmai. But I really think that, once Exxon got their act together and started marshaling forces, that there's been an effort I've never seen anything like it in my life, except in terms of World War II, frankly. I saw five task forces that were being supported on a daily basis around the clock, 24 hours a day, that were just staggering in terms of logistic capability, and they've tried. I don't think that someone asked me, well, what grade would I give them? I'd still give them an incomplete. That's the problem. I think that's the great problem. We all feel that the job is not done, and I'm not certain it'll ever be done to our satisfaction. And I hope one of these days we'll turn the discussion to what we're going to do to try and mitigate the damage, on one hand, to the resources, and try to enhance the areas such as migratory waterfowl and the otter population and some of the fishery population. We won't know for 5 years whether there's been really any long-term harm to the salmon resources. I just do not take the risk. I'd like to see a hatchery or two built now that we'll be producing, so that if we're wrong and there is not going to be any long-term damage, that they will have an enhanced population as a result of this disaster.
Well, Senator, let's extend this conversation to Governor Steve Cooper, who we understand is now in Juneau and ready to join us. Governor, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I don't know if I'm getting through or not, but I can certainly hear you.
Yes, indeed, you are. The concern right now, Governor, is what to do next. What kind of environmental constraints have got to be put on the industry from your perspective, and where do we go from here? You made an announcement yesterday regarding the winter cleanup and what the state's going to do, but you also have some concerns about what Exxon needs to do. Perhaps you can tell us what your thoughts are on that.
From the standpoint of the cleanup, it's clear that you cannot continue the kind of massive effort that took place over the summer and up until yesterday. The activities on those remote beaches need to be curtailed because the winter weather in Prince William Sound and Kodiak and the other affected areas is such that you would put people's lives in danger if you put them out there in these situations. So we need to scale back what's being done now. It's important, I believe, to do research on technologies and methodologies of cleanup, particularly the kinds of methodologies that lend themselves to cleaning up the substrate beneath the beaches. We should keep doing work on those methodologies all winter so that when we go back in the spring, we will know what works and what doesn't. Secondly, we need to keep a very careful watch out for the location of the oil and also the condition of the oil. The oil changes with the length of time that it's been in the water and been exposed to the weather. We need to make sure we know where the oil is and what kind of oil we will be dealing with next spring. We need to protect the hatcheries. There's no question about that. We need to make an extra effort there because winter storms could well drive oil into those so far protected areas. We've got to be very careful about that. I think we've got a lot of work to do during the winter. The state intends to put into place a community cleanup effort, something that lends itself to common sense during the winter. We know that crews from the villages and towns that have been affected cannot go out to remote locations, but probably they can go into bays that are relatively close to those communities and do some good productive work when the weather's good. Once again, we don't want to jeopardize anybody's lives here, but there should be some activity during the winter.
Well, we've got Senator Ket Stevens with us here in the studio in Anchorage. Can we go back to the issue of federal oil spill legislation, the issues of shipper liability, and this issue of preemption of states' rights? Where's the state of Alaska coming down now in terms of the legislation that's in the federal hopper?
Well, we're adamantly against any preemption of state statutes here. We find that our state, and I understand the state of Maine and probably some other states, have higher standards than exist today and probably would exist in the future with the federal legislation. If we have higher standards, I think that we ought to be free to impose those standards. All states are different. As the gentleman from Maine earlier mentioned, Maine and Alaska are a long way from Washington, D.C. in all sorts of ways. We don't want to be preempted. We're already preempted in terms of our tanker safety statutes that we put on the books in the 1970s. A federal court ruled that we could not impose those higher standards, so we've already gotten stung by federal preemption. We don't want any more of it.
Senator Stevens?
Well, the governor's absolutely right, and we have a special interest because, as I indicated, you know, we all know we're an oil-producing state. Half of the domestic oil that moves by tanker moves out of Alaskan waters, and we have an unquestioned right to protect our state waters, and I think constitutionally that the Congress cannot cut off our right to do that. But beyond that, Steve and I have been working together, this convention, you know, on oil spill liability, the protocols really are to a previous international treaty, and those protocols do increase the liability under the treaty, but not enough. We couldn't possibly live with the limits there. And the real problem, as I said before, I think the governors and his people understand this well or better than I, because the problem comes to the fact that the claims that our people seek to now have satisfied against Exxon, in the event that this was an international, a foreign tanker, would have to go against an international fund that would be outside the United States. Now how in the world would our fishermen from Cordova and Kodiak and Seward be able to go and present their claims to some international fund to people who in the first place don't understand our situation as well as the rest of the United States, and you know how well that is. They don't understand us at all. They have no comprehension of the size and condition of our coastline or of the circumstances under which we conduct fishing activity and general economic activity. So I think we've got to protect our state law. We've done that, and it is not a partisan matter. I think that listeners throughout the country ought to understand that. George Mitchell's a Democrat, I'm a Republican. We've got Republican senators, Republican governors, and Democratic senators and Democratic governors all working together on this issue to try and protect the rights of states, to protect their legitimate interests within their own waters.
Senator, we'll get back to this issue in a moment. Right now, I think we'd all like to hear from someone on the scene, on the beaches, or in this case, Admiral Paul Yost, the Commandant of the Coast Guard. He's been out looking over the spill sites. He's on board the Coast Guard cutter Sweetbriar right now, and we have the Admiral on the line. Admiral, can you hear us?
I sure can. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Welcome to the program, Admiral. What are you seeing? Are you getting a look at the beaches, and are you satisfied with what you're seeing?
I'm seeing a lot of the beaches. I'm also seeing, by the way, one of the most glorious days in Alaska that the kind of weather that only Alaska can have. It's a gorgeous day. In any event, I've been over a lot of the beaches. I am impressed with the amount of effort that Exxon has put into the cleanup. I'm not as impressed with the final result of the cleanup. The beaches aren't clean, but frankly, neither do I think any of us had a reasonable reason to feel that they would be clean. It's almost an impossible job to restore these beaches, but there has been a lot of effort go into it. And I've got to give credit to Exxon for putting that effort in. We still need some more cleaning.
Admiral Yost, this is Pat Bodner in Anchorage. Bruce Baker from the State Department of Fish and Game here in Alaska told me in an interview this week that actually more than 147,100 barrels appear unrecovered of that crude oil out there. That is was a big number. Now, what do you think the winter cleanup is going to be able to do to kind of get rid of some of that?
Well, Exxon and the Coast Guard both are moving into a winter operation, which is going to be a considerable step down from the activity that we've had during the summer. The Coast Guard's going to be here all winter long. Exxon will be here with a much reduced force as well all winter long. And I have the commitment from top management in Exxon that they'll return in the spring and that they'll do whatever the Coast Guard tells them to do, and of course I've assured them that that will be reasonable. I don't think we're going to recover any oil this winter. I think that there'll be a minuscule amount of oil recovered this winter. What we need to look at is what nature will do in the way of cleaning up the beaches, biodegrading, and that kind of thing during the winter, and I hope that the high energy of the wind at sea on some of these cobble shorelines will be very helpful.
We have, we are going to go to a caller next. We have a caller from Chicago. Let us also remind you that the number here for you to call in on our national call-in is 800-325-1100. Are you with us, Chicago?
Hello?
Go ahead, Chicago. You have a question.
Yes, actually I have kind of a statement on it. I'd like the legislators or whoever is out there to comment on it. I think that I really don't want to take away from the emphasis of this program, which appears at this point to be sort of holding Exxon's feet to the fire and cleaning up the damage that was done. But what I would like to say is that historically, industries have not paid the real social and environmental costs of production, and we only have to look at things like the 30,000 plus toxic waste dumps from chemical and nuclear industries, from to the air pollution from our industries, to water pollution, not only from oil spills but from other things being dumped into our waters. To see that the industry isn't really paying these costs, and I think that the damage that these things are causing are irreversible, and the damages, the changes that are happening are things that we really can't address. So you hear people saying time and time again, like the admiral that was just on, that they've done a really good job, but had done a lot of effort, but it wasn't enough. And I don't think it ever can be enough. I don't think it's possible. I think that that we can't go back to the way it's been. We're really damaging our Earth. And I think that our problem is not maybe the corporate greed or whatever it is that you want to blame companies with, as much as it is us, our sort of insatiable demand for resources, that our attitude is that they're unlimited resources, that we have an inexhaustible supply of gas, of energy, of oil, of whatever it is that we need, that we want to drive big cars, that we want to have light up our cities day and night, all of these kinds of demands that we demand that industries meet, and we're
okay.
not willing for that, mm-hmm. to demand that our legislators force the companies to to do it to pay those real costs.
Okay, thank you very much, caller from Chicago. I think the bottom line here is that this caller is asking about federal regulations. Who should industry be regulated even further? Senator, do you want to address that question?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that caller is that the caller assumes that industry pays the bill. It's the consumer that pays the bill. In terms of Alaskan oil, I like to remind people that beginning 16 years ago, our state and the industry put aside 5 cents a barrel on every barrel of oil that came through the pipeline until we reached the liability fund limits. It's only now, 16 years later, that the federal government is moving towards having a national liability fund. It is going to be substantially higher because of the experiences the Exxon Valdez. But I think one of the things that has made the difference is that the consumers throughout the country are not interested in paying more for gasoline. We've got to keep in mind that this liability fund is going to put into a fund money that's going to sit there until there is another disaster. God forbid we have another one. But just as the Alaska liability fund stayed there for 16 years without being used, this one is going to be there until there's this fund of that kind. It's going to be consumers' money that's in the till. Incidentally, I hope we get back to this question about what the president has or has not done. I want to tell you there's a lot more that the president's done on this bill than anyone realizes.
We have the president's representative here on the oil spill, Admiral Yost. Admiral Yost, do we have you back on the line?
We sure do.
Let's talk about that issue of what the president's done and what the president is going to continue to do through the Coast Guard and through his authority over the oil spill.
Well, I'm glad to be on the program with Senator Stevens. He's certainly been a voice for Alaska at the highest levels of this administration. He's a voice that's listened to in the White House. When Ted Stevens talks, people in Washington listen. And Ted Stevens has brought to the administration the concern that the Alaskans had about this oil spill, and it was through his input that I'm sure that much of what has been done in the administration was done, and the president is very concerned about this. Of course, the vice president is coming up here Monday, the second trip the vice president's made. The president directed me to conduct personal oversight on the spill cleanup. This is my 40th day in Alaska, this summer my seventh trip. So there's been a lot of concern in the administration and with the president, this is a disaster of national proportions, and it needs to be treated as such.
I could mention too that Governor Steve Cooper is still on the line with us from Juneau. Governor, in concert with the winter spill plan you just introduced, what can Admiral Yost do for you? What can the federal government do for you at this point?
Well, we think the Coast Guard has performed well here. And we certainly believe that the Coast Guard will remain in an active role during the winter as well as in the spring when we need to consider what we have to do after the winter storms have passed. I think that under the circumstances of the federal legislation that bound all of us and also in view of the fact that everybody had lawyers out there who were telling them what they could and couldn't do, I think that the cooperation between the state and the Coast Guard has been excellent. And I think the Coast Guard's done a good job here. I know that they're not going to abandon ship on us. I know that they're going to be here over the winter as well as during the spring. Of course, they have a presence here in any event. So I expect to work even closer with the Coast Guard.
Admiral Yost, critics have said that the Coast Guard and your on-scene coordinators have been reluctant to really wield a big stick with Exxon, reluctant to cut off experiments with some of these chemical cleaners and so forth when they didn't seem to be doing much good, reluctant to push them harder to extend the cleanup. Is that true?
No, I don't think that's true. Frankly, I was hoping, as I think many of us were, that some of the chemical cleaners would, in fact, make a major impact on this oil spill. The fact that they didn't, that there were problems with them, it was a great disappointment, I think, to everybody. Exxon, in my view, underestimated the work required in this bill by somewhere around 20%. They had a plan that would have had them finish the cleanup sometime in mid-August. And here we are in mid-September, and we're scrambling, or we're scrambling in the last few days to clean, to treat the last few miles of beach. And as a matter of fact, those last few miles, although they were treated, were not fully treated, and the Federal Unseen Coordinator, in permitting a demobilization, noted that those beaches were not treated to the extent that they should have been, and that the other beaches had been. So Exxon ended up not quite completing all of the job that they started out to do, and barely getting finished by demobilization date when they had planned and thought they'd do it some 30 days sooner. So they had underestimated the amount of work here.